I am so excited. In 7 days, Lord willing, I'll be boarding a plane to be flying out towards Cana of Galilee. Now, I wish that I could take all of you with me, but that's not possible. But let's go there right now. Jesus is invited to a wedding. Now, weddings in those days were not a day. They would be like a week. Celebration, the neighbors would be invited, there'd be hundreds and hundreds of people there. So Jesus is there, Mary is there, the disciples are there, they're all there. The only problem is because there's so many people there, they run out of wine. And so Mary says to Jesus, do something. Jesus says, what is that between you and me, woman? My hour has not come, or in some translations, has my hour come? It's either a question mark or a statement, it's hard to determine. And so Jesus tells these men to take these purification jars and to fill them up with water, and in the process, they turn into wine. And then they drink it. Now, that's the Sunday school version. There's more to it. Three W's. First one is the wedding, second one is the woman, and the third is the wine. Three W's to hang all of this on. The wedding, the woman, and the wine. So the wedding. Now, I've done many weddings. You've probably been to weddings. Maybe you're married. For the bride, it is a big day, right? Do you remember your wedding? Or you've been to someone's wedding? I mean, she wants everything to be perfect. In the gospel this morning, there's no mention of the bride at all. She's not even talked about. And the groom, at the end, just a little bit, but not much. Why? Well, John is sharing with us something very subtle. This is really not about a man and a woman getting married, though it is, and it truly did happen in Cana. But there's more to it. In the scriptures, God and Israel are in a covenant relationship of marriage. We see it in Genesis, we see it in Exodus, we see it in our first reading today in Isaiah. We see it in Hosea. We see it tied in the scriptures of God's covenant marital love to the people of Israel. It's not a contract. It's not a written up agreement. It's a marriage. It's a covenant. It's about Israel loving his spouse, Israel, and creating this people to love her and to create her and to bring her as a light to all of the nations. So it's more than just a earthly marriage that John is alluding to. He's alluding to the covenant love between Israel and Yahweh, God himself. Now, there's something also interesting about this. In John's gospel, if you've ever read it or you can recall it, it begins by imitating the book of Genesis. In the beginning, that's how Genesis starts. But John also begins the same way, in the beginning. In the gospel, we have the first day, the second day, the third day, the fourth day, 3 days later. In Genesis, we have the same thing. The first day God did this, the second day God did this, everything was good. Now, in today's gospel, we heard this morning that this is the third day. It is the third day. But it's also the seventh day, and it's a little confusing. The reason why it's the seventh day is there's 4 days that precede the third day. If you really carefully read the first and second chapter, you can see this. There's a first day, second day, third day, fourth day. And then John says, then on the third day. So if you add the 4 and the 3, you come up with the number 7. Now, why is this important? Because in the Old Testament, to make an oath or to cut a covenant simply meant to create something that had to do with the word 7. In fact, the word in Hebrew is Shiva. To Shiva oneself really literally meant to seventh oneself. So what we see in Genesis is God creates the world in how many days? 6. And then on the 7th day, he rests. It's not because he's tired. He's creating an oath. He's creating a covenant with creation, with Adam and Eve. You ever wonder why Adam and Eve are together as one? Bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. Because it's a wedding. It's the first wedding in history. Our parents, Adam and Eve, are brought together into a covenant relationship, a wedding, with each other. They are one, but they're also one with God. And the scriptures also end with the book of Revelation, with the wedding. And here we have in the middle of the gospel, or the beginning of the gospel, again, a wedding. So the seventh is a very sacred number. It ties to the covenant. It ties to the promise that God is with his people in a very close relationship, very much like a marriage. And so here, on the third day in John's gospel, it's really the seventh day, and here we have God of God, light of light, instituting a covenant, bringing forth the messianic age with the people of Israel. He's bringing it forth on the seventh day. And just as God created a covenant with creation in the first Genesis, here we have a new beginning for those who have ears to hear, eyes to see, and hearts to believe. He's creating a new covenant. Now, it's also the third day, to be fair. It is the third day, but it's also the seventh day. And why is the third day important? Because in Exodus chapter 19, God appears to the people of Israel on Mount Sinai on the third day. You know the story. God uses Moses to take the people of Israel out of Egypt into the promised land. He brings them prior to that to Mount Sinai. He cuts a covenant with the people of Israel, the tablets, the law. And then in chapter 19 of Exodus, God promises through Moses that it will be on the third day that Yahweh will make his appearance to the people of Israel. He will manifest his glory on the third day. Deuteronomy tells us that that is exactly what happened. So, the third day, when the people would hear this in John's gospel, that Jesus did this miracle on the third day, he's manifesting his glory. He's the same God of Mount Sinai. He's the same God that created a covenant with the people of Israel on that mountain in the desert. He is the same God that spoke at the beginning, "Let there be light," and there was light in the creation account. So that covers the wedding. Is it a wedding? Sure, it's a wedding. But the bride's never mentioned, because the bride is the church. The bride is Israel. The bride is the Gentiles. And the bridegroom is the one who is serving the wine. Next, we come to the woman. Now, this is interesting, especially if you're a woman. Who wants to be called woman? Nobody, right? In antiquity, that term was not really offensive at all. However, we don't have any account of a son calling his mother woman. So it's a little strange that Jesus would say, woman, you know, why would he do that? Well, John, in his gospel, only mentions Mary twice, two times. You know where they are? Well, first of all, at this wedding. And the second time at the foot of the cross. But he never mentions her name. She's addressed as woman. Remember at the cross, John, behold thy woman. Woman, behold thy son. And here in this wedding, in John's gospel, the very beginning, she is referred to not as Mary, but as woman. Now, why would he do that? Again, it takes us back to the old covenant. It takes us back to Genesis. Remember the story of the man, Adam, and the woman, Eve, right? And so what does Eve do? Eve eats of the forbidden fruit, and she pushes the man to do something that is probably not best in both of their interests. She says, I've eaten, why don't you eat too, right? And so what we find with this new woman is a reversal of what happened in Genesis. Because what this woman is saying is, do whatever he tells you to do. In other words, obey him. Listen to him. Now, who is Jesus? He's the new Adam. And so Mary is reversing what Eve did in a very symbolic and probably a very literal way. What she's saying is, don't you want to bring in your messianic kingdom? Don't you want to get this thing started? And so she's doing exactly the opposite of what Eve did. In Genesis 3:15, it talks about this woman who will bring forth a son who will crush the head of the serpent. And so this is what this woman is doing. She's bringing forth, through her nudging, if you will, Jesus to do something. And she says something that's very interesting. Do you remember? Do whatever he tells you to do. Why is this important? Because when Moses comes down from the mountain with the tablets and the law and the covenant on Mount Sinai, what do the people say? We will do whatever he has told us to do. And they didn't. And neither do we. Isn't it interesting that all of this ties together? To me, I can't sleep about this stuff. It's very exciting that all of this ties together. How the people would say, yeah, we're going to do it. We'll do it. We'll follow you, Yahweh. And of course, they don't. They're building the calf. They're worshiping. They're falling into fornication. They're acting crazy. But here, this woman in today's gospel says, do whatever he tells you to do. She represents, personifies faithful Israel, the church, who listens and follows her Lord. So we came to the wedding, we came to the woman, finally we come to the wine. The wine. Now, these are giant jars. In fact, next week I'll see them. Probably as big as this pulpit. That's how big they are. So they're not jars you can walk around with. 120 gallons, 180 gallons of water. More than enough. More than enough. In Numbers, we're told that if a person comes into contact with a dead person, they are unclean for 7 days. There's that number again, 7 days. And they have to purify themselves in a ritual manner. And here's how it works. They have to cleanse themselves on the third day. And then they have to cleanse themselves on the seventh day. And then they're cleansed. And so Jesus takes this and lifts it, because they have this in their head. And he takes these giant jars. They are filled with water, purification jars, that people would use to cleanse themselves on the third day and the seventh day. And miraculously, the water turns into wine. Immediately, the Jewish people would think of Moses, because this was Moses' first miracle, taking the Nile, the water, and turning it into blood. This was his first miracle. This is Jesus' first miracle. For Scripture prophesies that one like Moses will come and follow. Here he is. And there's an abundance of wine. There's more wine than anyone could ever drink at this party, this wedding. Why is that important? Because in Isaiah and in Joel and in Amos, it prophesies that when the Messianic age comes, there will be an abundance of wine. That the mountains will shed forth abundance of wine when the Messianic age comes. So what is this all about? It's all about three things. It's about a wedding, it's about a woman, and it's about a wine, and it all points to the new covenant. It all points to the Eucharist that we're celebrating here, right now. So it's not like we have to get on a plane and go to Cana. We don't. It's impossible for some. It's impossible to go back 2,000 years. But what's beautiful is that it's right here, right now, for those who believe. The gospel ends by saying that his disciples believed in him. They recognized that this was the Messiah. They recognized that this was the bridegroom married to the church, bringing forth the Messianic age. And so today, you and I, brothers and sisters, all of us together as family, are invited to the wedding. And why would we be invited to this wedding? Because we have been adopted into the family. We've been adopted into the family, and therefore he bids us to come to the feast right now. Do you believe that? I hope you do.